Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios on this Wednesday morning. Actually, Tuesday night. Joining me tonight, Josh Webb, one of my favorite and best turkey hunting partners, Troy Ruiz.
Yes,
happening. I know it was a long duck season, but when you said this morning, and here it is, 8:45 at night. Josh, I'm beginning to wonder about this fella.
I've been wondering about him for a long time.
so that little statement he just made for the opening solidifies what you've been wondering. Whatever it might be, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's going to pop up in people's news feeds about 8:30 or 9 in the morning. So them to think that the early bird got the worm.
Yeah. How many y'all, both of y'all got up this morning wishing you can go duck hunting or deer hunting or something? Gosh dang, it's cold.
Well, I was going to say, it felt like we should have been. You know, it spit snow at my house yesterday morning until 9:30, something like that, in town.
Yeah, here too.
You know.
That's crazy, ain't it? But it does. But you know what? We say it every year, and it does. It pretty much does this every year. We'll get another cold snap around Easter. We always do. And, you know. Like right now, everybody's worried to death. You know, a week ago, it was almost 80 degrees. Turkeys are going to be finished gobbling before the season gets here. I had a guy ask me the other day, he says, man, with all this rain, what do you think it does to the turkeys? I said, get some wet.
Make them uncomfortable for a few hours. That's about it.
Gives them some worms to peck at. The worms come pushing up out of the ground because there's so much rain. So, you know, you got good fat turkeys come April. April showers bring May flowers. Amen.
Hey Troy, you know until this cold front pushed through, this is going to be the earliest turkey season ever. I mean, they were doing it.
I saw that. You know,
it was gonna be,
we talked
it was
about
be
this
over before it started.
Oh, long over with. We got off into that some on. Podcast, I guess that was last week, but I don't know, I've never understood it, but why people jump to that kind of conclusion. But and then I saw a thing, there's some five or six, I can't remember how many WMAs are pushing turkey season back to like the first, April 1st or something on there to help with some gobbler carryover or whatever. I didn't read into it a whole lot. Didn't really have to because all the Facebook pages told me that it was stupid for the state to do that, according to all the professionals. But most of them were voicing their opinion that turkey season would be long over with by then. And matter of fact, according to about half of them, turkey season should have started February the 16th. Apparently we're behind, you know.
for all the people that think it's going to be over before it started, they best inform God, because God programmed them to do exactly what they do, how they do it, and the way they do it, whether it's deer, elk, turkeys, waterfowl, mockingbirds, red-breasted robins. For turkeys, it's length of daylight hours. It has nothing to do with the temperature. It's every year people say the same thing, and every year we still have the same turkey season, and it's God given, and it's going to be the same no matter what. You know, it's no different than changing daylight saving times. It's just that part of it's just man-made, and the rest of it's man-made too. As far as hunting seasons go, and dates, and because of this, and because of that, and carryovers, and you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's more people turkey hunting now than there ever was, but there's more turkeys now than there ever was too.
Crappie's on length of day too, right? Crappie spawn.
They are, but you know, crappie spawn can deal with a lot of things. It can deal with water temperature. It could deal with
water temperature. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
The amount of water, the depth of the water, where the water's at. You know, right now, goodness gracious, every lake we got in the state of Mississippi is overflowing its bank. So for the crappie fishermen, that's a good thing because now everybody that's always wanted to wade fish, they can wade fish. I went across the spillway the other day here on the south end of the reservoir. And you literally could walk from boat to boat to boat to boat. And they was all stacked up in that little east corner right there where the water just basically does an eddy right there by the rocks. And they ain't no telling how many fish they're pulling out of there. And you know what? It's like that every year at this time of the year. No matter how much water's coming through there, they're catching fish.
That's right. Well, you know, the simple and quick answer Rocky and I gave to most of those folks, whatever it was, a week or two ago, on, you know, about turkey season being over with, crappie spawn being over with, and them being so worried about it. We just told them, Troy, that's fine. Don't go. And just
stay home.
Just drop me a pin. I'll go check it out and make sure they're not, the turkeys ain't gobbling and the crappie ain't biting for you. I'll be happy to go, you know, check out your places. I'd hate for them to waste their time.
until turkeys start migrating from the north to the south, I don't think we got to worry much about the weather.
No, but I'm gonna worry real bad if that starts happening, because a whole lot of things have changed. If that happens,
you got that right.
Well,
so, man, what y'all been up to since August? Goodness gracious, last well, I saw you since then. I saw Rocky since then, but I haven't seen you since. I haven't seen you since.
Oh, since August? I've moved 200 miles north back to my hometown. I've had another baby.
They finally ran you out, huh?
They did. Yeah, it finally happened. Oh, God, what else? I've moved houses twice. But everything's good. It's all been the good Lord's timing. There's no way we could have ever planned it the way it went. It all happened, and everything has been smooth as silk. But it's been a little crazy, I guess, from the outside looking in. But everything's been good.
Isn't it fun to look back at the puzzle after it's finished?
Yeah, I think that's about the best way of saying it. Yeah, you know, there's been times where Katie, you know, my wife and I looked at each other, and said, "What in the world are we doing?" But, you know, that those little moments didn't last long because we knew it was happening for a reason. So, we're happy to be back, back in Northeast Mississippi, and it has been a very warm welcome. Rocky don't like me being up here because he can't drive by my house in the Delta anymore. When Rocky go visit his mama, he wouldn't, you know, Troy, it got so bad where he wouldn't even come by my house anymore. He'd stay on the highway, but he would just lay on the horn for about a mile and a half. And, you know, I'd be sitting in my house and I'd just hear just a faint, just, you know. And I said, well, dang, I wonder what that was. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, Rocky and Roy Ann and the kids are sending me a message, you know. Hey, that was us. Well, thanks. Hey, here I am. But Rocky don't like it anymore because there's nobody living in that house and he don't have anybody to harass. So,
Bill's right up the street from me. There's
two or three Bills left around. Things are good. Other than that, things are good, but you've had a new grandbaby, new grandboy.
Man,
that is crazy. That's what's crazy, saying that. that you're a granddaddy. Yeah, I mean, you've walked like a granddaddy now for like 10 or 15 years, turkey hunting.
Yeah, well, at least I don't fall in the ditches.
You know, have I ever, I'm glad you brought that up. And I don't know if that had anything to do with what I'm about to say, but did I ever tell you about the time I was on the phone with Rocky and he was trying to, I think you were trying to look at a turkey. It was during turkey season last year, and Rocky stepped out of his truck and stepped in a hole, and I thought he died. I thought I was just going to have to call next of kin for him.
Yeah, well,
it may have been 2 years ago. He blew a hole.
When Rocky falls, that's a long way down.
That's true. All I heard was just, hey, hang on, I gotta look at this. I said, okay, and I was on speakerphone in his truck, and all I could hear was, oh my god, oh, and I said, what is happening? And this went on for a little bit, and I didn't know where he was, nothing. We were just on the phone, and then this happened, and then somehow or another, he got the phone turned off. And all I could hear him saying was my leg, and I thought, well, dang, Rocky is off. I mean, you know, I didn't know what happened. Come find out.
But that's
what it happened, right?
Different.
You got out to look at a turkey or something.
Yeah, it was a pet turkey at somebody's house, and they had a pothole in their driveway.
That's what it was. And you were going to get out and make him gobble. That's right.
All you had to do was stomp your foot, he would gobble.
Try to kill that sucker. Don't let him lie to you.
Yeah, and karma snuck up on him. Mm-hmm.
But here's
I literally misstepped 2 inches and messed my knee up for the rest of my life. I have to have knee replacement surgery when I'm about 50 or 60 because of that. But
You just made a good comment right there that you're going to need knee replacement surgery by the time you're 50. But before that, what started this conversation was you saying, I've been walking like I'm a grandpa for a long, long time. Well, I got 2 bad knees from carrying all this camera equipment, and I'm 53. So, you know, it's coming to you. But, hey, here's the deal. If you've ever seen Rocky can do a lot of things. He's a very talented person. And I'm thankful to be around him, and God has blessed me to know him and be my friend, and whether it's duck hunting, all the things we've got to do together. But there's one thing Rocky can't do, and I don't think he'll ever do it good. He can't fall gracefully. It just can't happen.
This is the most awful thing in the world. I would never do this to a friend, what Troy's about to tell what he and Kit did.
Oh, God. I ain't doing it. Because if I did this, I mean, this podcast would go viral. I'm going to let you do it. Because,
you know how there's always that one little slippery place when you're crossing the creek?
Yeah.
It's wet. It's really, really slick. You hit it, and, well, they had made it down. Well, they had moved the leaf just enough that when I hit it, oh, man, it came out from under me. And this is literally like it's a 12-foot drop. And when I hit, I'm lucky that what can you do to your aorta if you hit too hard?
You rupture it.
Yeah, rupture my aorta. I hit so hard. They have the nerve to walk over. I sit there.
I know that sound because that's all I could hear on the speakerphone that day was, ugh. I said, what is happening to you?
The first thing we told you was you need to be quiet. You won't spook the dang turkey.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Troy almost put a knee in my chest and put his hand on my mouth.
He kept trying to stand up, and I kept telling him, don't stand up. Just put your face to the ground and breathe.
Troy did have just a little bit of, oh, man, are you okay? Kit's laughing. You can see it through his old beard's covering his face. He just dying laughing.
I don't know if you remember what I said. I asked you if you were all right, and you said, yeah. I said, good, give me a gun.
Oh man.
The fall wasn't so bad. It was Rocky trying to stop himself from falling because he knew Kit and I was going to laugh. That's what made it so good.
Oh man. He knew immediately that the embarrassment was going to be worse than the pain. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But we've all been there.
No,
You recover that matters, you know.
Wow.
Well, no, and then the bad part about that day was what it wasn't a fall that day. It was about 30 minutes later. They want me to go squat crawl. Do you know what a squat crawl is? Through a cotton field. And for somebody 6'6" to squat crawl 200 yards, it's impossible. They could bend over and walk. But I had to, like, squat crawl to get to the same level as them. I said, y'all go ahead. Y'all go kill a turkey.
Oh, man. It's amazing. It's amazing the things as you get older that seem to be funny to you. Like when people get hurt.
Yeah.
Ooh, man.
Hey, Troy, I want to ask you this. When I came in the house from dinner, on DVR, it popped up that it would record a Primo show. And you edited this show. I mean, you edit all the shows. But what I found interesting in this show is Will had turkeys right on him before he could get a mask on.
Yeah.
That's something you never see in turkey hunting.
Well, what happened was it was quite warm that afternoon. And Jordan and Will had set up in a spot where they had heard some turkeys the morning before and were just kind of really just sitting there just to see what they could hear. And if they would strike one, they'd work it. If not, maybe put one to bed and be able to come back in the morning. And they were sitting in this big log jam, and Will was sitting there. It was a long walk to the top of this hill over in on the Kentucky-Tennessee state line. And once they got up there, Wilbur was a little bit warm, so he just kind of sat there for a minute and, you know, made the ultimate mistake that most of us do make, especially on a place that we don't know or we've never hunted before and have no idea where the turkeys may even be. And when he yelped on that call and turkeys gobbled right down the hill from him, it was too late. But what he did is, if you look at what he did in that situation, is him and Jordan set up in that log pile, but they set up on the shady side. So he was safe and good. And once Will makes, you know, like most of us, putting a head net on and is sometimes an act of Congress. You got to take your hat off and get your head net on and get it right and get your mouth call back in your mouth and get your gun. And by the time Wilbur did all that, he figured it'd be a lot easier for me to just sit here and don't move. So that was his choice, and it worked out good. You know, as long as you don't move, I don't think they'll see you. I mean, it's a head net's mainly for the times that you're sitting there and you don't think a turkey's even coming. That's when they usually see you.
That's true. And I've been stuck in situations where it was just like, no, it's not going to be, you know, I just can't move. I just got to, you know, do what I got to do. But
just bear down.
That's what I was going to say. You know, I'm not going to tell anybody not to wear a face mask, but you caught in a situation like that. I mean, you know, chances are you got a gun there. Just bury your face into your gun and you know, make it work. But, I didn't, you know, and I just now kind of thought about it. We're sitting here, turkey season in Mississippi is not far off, but it's open in Florida. Are y'all not going to Florida? In Florida?
I'm home. Lake and George is going Thursday, I think. I've got some television shows to finish and a few things to take care of at the office, and they'll go for a few days. I'm really not going anywhere outside of Mississippi until the 23rd of March. I'm going to Georgia and hunting with the NWTF, but on a place that a friend of mine, Travis Sumner, knows. And NWTF is doing a really big deal this year, and they got a big push on doing a mentorship with kids 18 and older that have never, ever, ever been hunting, and giving them their first opportunity at that age to have an opportunity to go. And so we're going to do that. Me and Jimmy and I is going to be a part of that. And then Once we get this young boy, young girl a turkey, I'll give them a good hunt for a couple of days. We'll get to hunt as well. Well, Jimmy will. And then we'll come back home, and I'll be home for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 days. And then got to head down to Louisiana, do some stuff with the family. And then I'll be back on the 29th and then head to head to Alabama then for about 4 or 5 days. And, you know, once April hits, it's Alabama.
It's wide open.
Yeah, it's Missouri, Iowa, Texas, you know, all that good stuff, all the way till the 1st of May.
What? Now, I know in years past, y'all – or we've talked about it in podcasts, y'all end up turkey hunting where you elk hunt in New Mexico, is that right?
Yeah, that'd be that last week when we tend to
okay.
go out there
yeah,
and
kind
finish
of
up the season.
End turkey season and then turn around and you're back out there in September
mm-hmm.
chasing the elk, and it was kind of a cool thing. Yeah, that's what I didn't know if y'all were going back out there. That's always a cool – ever since you mentioned that, I guess I paid a little more attention to it on the show, but it is cool to kind of know that, and it's gonna be cool for y'all because I mean it's still fresh on your mind when you turn around and go right back out there a few months
well,
later.
You go out there turkey hunting, and then the first day we go back elk hunting, and the first thing we all say to each other, man, it feels like we just left. Well, guess what? You did.
Yeah, yeah, you haven't been gone that long. Yeah, That's pretty cool. That sounds like a cool trip, Troy.
Well, it will be. I'm hoping that that everything works together and a little plan that we made earlier in the year comes together. We'll see how that goes weather-wise and all the other stuff we got going. So we'll see if it's going to come together, and we might get an opportunity to get a Miriam or two.
And we hope that the weather will work out and we get Ann Fleming on a turkey next week.
Mm-hmm. I know Saturday is supposed to be pretty nasty, but you know, Whew. Usually in this part of the world, when you have a nasty day or two, it turns off nice for about 2 or 3 days, and that's all. As a turkey hunter, that's what you strive and pray for is two good.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have 2 bad days and 3 good days.
Do they scientifically are they like humans? You know, when you've been in the rain, and they're actually in it, but you know, you just have some pretty days and you just feel good.
Well, they do the same thing. I think high pressure does that. I mean, it does it to fish. It does it to deer.
Yeah.
I watched, let's see, was it Sunday? It was Sunday. Yeah, it would have been Sunday afternoon. I had to run over to Jimmy's house, bring him something from here. And it was Sunday after the rain quit, you know, that first little peak of sun we got, which was about 4:15 in the afternoon. And I was going over to the lake where Jimmy lives, not far from me. And man, it was like deer were coming out of the woodwork. there was deer in people's front yards. There was deer crossing the road. There was deer standing on the edge. There was deer everywhere around Lake Caroline. And I'm like, what flipped this switch? And you know, you sit back and look at it. Well, it's been raining for 2 days, and it's been warm and muggy. And now you got a cold front that just came through. The pressure changed, and the deer are up and moving. They were up and moving.
Yeah.
But as far as
turkey, what?
I've seen them. I've killed them in pouring down rain. Me and Timmy Renfro killed one time. Had a good. I actually didn't kill that turkey. We got on them, and a coyote wound up jacking that up. But I mean, these turkeys out in the middle of a big old bean field, just walking around, pouring down rain. And you know, what are they going to do? They can't dig a hole and crawl in it like an armadillo.
No. Yeah, they can't help it. They live in it. You know, last year it was I don't know, opening day, second day of season. It rained hard, and you know, Katie and I decided we were going, and it wasn't too bad at daylight, but hour and a half after daylight, it was pouring. But we had turkeys on us; we couldn't. I mean, there was nothing we could do about it. And you know, some of the best, for whatever reason, some of the best hunts I've been on have been in, you know, some of the most memorable anyway have been in the rain. Now I'm not going to sit out there if it's lightning and everything else, but you know, and people ask that sometimes, well, what's some of the, you know, craziest things that you've seen, or some of the crazy times you've been out there? And when I say rain, a lot of times people are like, what? Now, yeah, look, they live in it. They don't have a choice. Yeah. I mean, they don't have a choice. Is it different? Yeah. Is it comfortable? Not to us, but, and it's not really comfortable to them either, but heck, they live in it, you know.
Yeah,
so
they live there.
But, you know, and I think that's something, you know, usually I take that when people ask that kind of stuff, I kind of take that, and I don't know, Troy, you might do the same, Rocky, you too, but I take that as kind of a moment to help people understand that, look, you know, we go off and we do stuff months and months out of the year, and then we take 45 days to go step into their world, and you know, they don't think anything about it. They live there. They know every little twig. They know every little ditch. They know every little, I mean, they know everything. You know, people say, well, I can't figure out how I can't go out there and kill a 20-pound bird with a shotgun. Well, you know, you got to understand that there's nothing out there they hadn't already seen. You're walking into their living. You're walking into their living room, and you try to talk them out of their bedroom. You know,
they live there 365 days a year, and you're trying to make a. I tell people this all the time in seminars, and I actually did it the other day at the NWTF in a seminar. And it's amazing at how many people, turkey hunters, some of them older hunters, but a lot of you younger hunters are people that have gotten into the sport of turkey hunting and really haven't spent a lot of time educating themselves about the wild turkey. Because, I mean, who to know more about? Do you want to know more about how to call and yelp and cluck and purr, or do you want to know more about the critter that you're after? Well, you need to know more about the critter that you're after. You know, it's kind of like being a Christian. And so I asked a question. I said, how many people in here know why a wild turkey gobbles in the spring? And, you know, when you ask a question, most people don't raise their hand, but a couple of people raise their hand. And, you know, two people gave some answers. And one of them said, well, they do that so they can be the loudest bird in the woods, or they do that to outdo some of the loudest noises out there. And I said, okay, well, let me ask you this question. How many folks know why a rooster crows in the morning on a farm? Well, everybody raised their hand. Well, that's to wake us up, let us know it's daylight. And I'm thinking, well, that's what cartoons and movies and, you know, nursery rhymes and all the things that we remember as kids, we were programmed to know or to understand or to think that a rooster crows on a farm to wake you up in the morning because you forgot to wind your clock. Well, that's not true. A rooster crows in the morning on the farm to let the hens know where he's at.
Yeah.
And the same thing with a wild turkey gobbler. The only reason a wild turkey gobbler is gobbling in the springtime is to let his hens know where he is. So us as a turkey hunter, we're trying to make him do something he's not programmed by God to do.
That's right.
And that's make him come to
us. Right.
So you already got one strike
against you. Already got it against you.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
As a turkey hunter, honestly, probably the most important thing you need to do is to understand the habits of a wild turkey and the things that they do to eat and breed and survive. That's all they're here to do. That's what God put them here for. And
survive.
And we're trying to, man, they are scared to death of everything. Everybody says they're smart. They're not smart. They're scared.
Everything out there is trying to kill them. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You know, and that's, you know, and there's to add to that, you know, people ask me being in the business I'm in real estate, you know, people, especially land, people say, you know, I want to learn more about, this piece of property. I want to learn more about this land that I bought or whatever. And immediately I always tell them, well, number one, spend as much time out there as you can. It's fun. Find ways to make it fun. Get the family out there. But if you really want to learn every little nook and cranny, go turkey hunting. Go out there and go turkey hunting. He will teach you things about your property that you never knew. And people kind of look at me funny sometimes when I say that. And I say, look, you know, and I understand some people don't want to, you know, they got a property. They don't want to pressure the animals too much. I get that part of it. I do. So you don't want to, you know, may not want to be out there a lot in off season, but if you want to learn every little bitty thing about your property, go out there and hunt during turkey season. Woodsmanship kills more turkeys than anything. A lot of people overlook that, and that's what I'm getting at when I tell people that, and I try to help people understand that is knowing every little bitty thing about it. But just like you said, to do that, you got to know a turkey. And I had this conversation with somebody the other day. we were talking about turkeys and the way they act. You know, you sit there and watch them. Me and my brother were talking about it. You know, sit there and watch them. They'll walk right across this little, you know, the edge of this slough, you know, I mean, up to where half their beard's in the water. You know, I mean, just crazy stuff. And then you go out there and try to call one across that? No. You know, sometimes, I mean, he'll stand there and, you know, he'll let a twig get in his way and say, no, I'm not moving. And it leaves you sitting there scratching your head. But at the same time, you just learned, well, you know, I could have gone 15 yards left or right or, you know, this or that, but you really, really learn what the turkeys want to do. It just makes you a better, it gives you more woodsmanship. That's what my granddad told me that when I was real little, right. Is there's nothing more important than learning woodsmanship. I mean, and that goes for deer and everything else, but a turkey, especially.
Turkey hunting, 5% of it's calling, maybe less than that, and the rest of it's woodsmanship. But the key, you know, the bottom line is you've, as a turkey hunter / outdoorsman / woodsman, and understanding the critter that you're after and how to get closer to that critter and knowing where he wants to be. Because if you're in a spot where he don't want to be, I don't care what you do. He ain't coming. And you know, like you said earlier, you have that little twig or that little thing in between you and him.
Yeah.
You know, again, he knows you call to a turkey, yelp at a turkey, and he answers you. I don't care how far he is, and I don't care how far you think he is. If he answers you, he knows the tree you're sitting by. He knows exactly where you're at. It's no different than me coming in your house, Josh, even though you live in the new house, or coming into Rocky's house, and I'm standing in your living room, and you hear Katie call you from the house. Well, for me, I've never been in your house, but I'll look at you and go, Katie's calling you. And you'll go, yeah, she's in the back bedroom to the left. And I'm going to be like, yeah, I don't have no idea where that's at. But you know where it's at. Rocky did the same with Roy Ann or Mead or any one of his kids call you in your house. You know where they at. Turkeys do. Deer do the same. They all, man, let Katie move a picture off the wall tomorrow when you're at work and come back home and see if you don't notice that as soon as you walk in the house.
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting analogy, too, and it's something Rocky and I talk about, and three of us may have talked about it before, but you keep going back to, you know, Katie, which is my wife, but you think about that. We, depending on the situation, we might not notice as much as what a woman notices, but the same way in the spring turkey woods, what messes up or what seems to be more people's excuse than anything? Well, it was this hen, she showed up, or this hen started yelping, or this hen did this, this hen did that. Well, it's kind of the same way. I mean, if mama goes to hollering that something's wrong, and the whole woods know it, and the whole household knows it. And, you know, Rocky, now we talked about this last year in length a time or two about, and well, I know the three of us talked about it because we also compared it to a cow elk doing the same thing, an old cow elk doing the same thing. If she she makes one move just a little bit different, makes one little bitty sound a little bit different, everything around there notices and picks up on it and pays attention to her. And yeah, it goes right back to what we said earlier. Look, they're there 365 days a year. And a hen, you think about how many times has a hen been with a gobbler, or there's been a group of turkeys and this gobbler leaves and he gets shot. Well, all those hens out there, just what'd they just learn, you know? And that may have been one of those hens' babies. That, you know, that gobbler could have been one of their babies, or it could have been their boyfriend. But they learn even more, and same with cow elk and everything else. They see a lot, and that's something that I've tried to do in the last few years, is pay even more attention to the female side of things, animals.
That's who you pay attention to, because if you don't pay attention, I mean, look at, as turkey, just take turkey hunters, that's what we're talking about. That's what we're trying to mimic. That's who we're trying to be. You know, outside of gobbling back to a turkey and or using visuals, which is a strutting decoy or a hen decoy, to try to change that jealousy. But think about white-tailed deer. Think about bull elk. Think about antelope. Think about bighorn sheep. Think about moose. Think about all these animals that we hunt and we go after and we pursue. Bucks, bull moose, bull elk, all the critters that we go after. The male species at some point in time in a season, which is basically the rut and or the breeding season, they become dumb as a stump. That's the time of the year we all go after them.
Extremely vulnerable. The most vulnerable they're going to be, another way.
A doe, a cow elk, a hen turkey, they are G waiting on O from the time they come out of egg to the time they take their last breath. They are doing two things. Raising young and surviving.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. And your work said, man, look, I think y'all have heard me say this before. I never forget years ago, first time I ever hunted the Midwest with Mark and Terry Drury. And I was there about 6 days. And you're talking about a boy from South Louisiana, ain't never been out of Mississippi, Alabama. And I went up there and it was like, I looked at Mark and I said, this ain't nothing. He said, what you mean ain't nothing? I said, killing these deer up here. He said, what do you mean ain't nothing? I said, well, it's easy to pattern them. You got them coming from woodlot to woodlot, over the ridges, through the saddles. It makes perfect sense. I said, all y'all, the hardest thing for y'all to do is play the wind, which is hard anywhere, but passing up certain deer to wait for that right one. And, you know, back in those days, 150-inch deer was big and still is in my book. But I told Mark, I said, you want to prove to me what kind of hunter you are? I said, you come to Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana with your bow. And I want you to match wits with those 5, 6, 7-year-old does that we got. And he's like, whatever. Well, I never forget the first time they came to Willow Point over at Terror, and they did a catch a dream thing there years ago. And after about 3 days of hunting there, Mark was like, man, these deer up here are evil. To try to walk around looking up and think about it. How many times have you sat in a tree stand and have 2 or 3 hen turkeys come walking by and you just full camo and them song guns look up there and pick you out and you ain't even moved?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my point. I mean, that's what I was talking about a minute ago. I mean, you know, you think, from time to time, you know, there may be 2 or 3 gobblers in a group with a bunch of hens and 1 or 2 peel off and you kill one. Well, the one you killed didn't learn anything, but every other turkey in that bunch did, especially those hens, because that's the ones that you know, the hens, it just like you said, they got to get bred so they can have young, so they can continue on. But you know that gobbler, he didn't learn anything. Go ahead.
Let me ask y'all this, and Rocky, you chime in on this because you probably don't fell asleep back there. Do you believe that there's such a thing in call shy gobblers? Now think about it.
Yes.
You believe that there's call shy gobblers. What define a call shy gobbler from a turkey hunting stand, from a turkey hunter's dictionary? There's a show ain't in Webster dictionary, but this is the Rocky. This is the
Floor edition. Yeah. And when I say call shy, I mean that, you know, you can work same old gobbler on the same old place with the mouth call, and then there for a week he gives up on you. And you hit a box call one time, and it blows him up.
But do you think he's call shy, or did he just
or
is,
or
hear
are you where he
to hear?
That's what I was about to say. Or were you something, or were you where he didn't want to be, and then all of a sudden you were?
No, I mean. I just think that he realizes he's never going to find that hen.
But is that making him call shy?
I don't think it makes him call shy. It just makes him not resistant to that call.
Sure, it's that. Here's my definition of a call shy gobbler. It's a gobbler that has been called up and spooked by a turkey hunter.
Yeah. Because I agree with that.
How can a turkey how can a gobbler become call shy? And I can understand if he comes up there and don't see a hen, but that happens a lot in the woods. Turkeys hear hens, or deer hears another deer. It's just like me or you, you know. But think about it this way. You're in the turkey woods making a turkey sound. How do you make a turkey or turn a gobbler into a call shy gobbler when you're making turkey sounds? Because some of the worst sounds I've ever heard in the turkey woods have come from the hen's beak.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, I can't. How many times have you been sitting there and you're thinking, here comes somebody trespassing, I'm fixing to
burn
them
up.
And you stand up and you're sitting there, and all of a sudden this big hen walks out and you're like, holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
So after 40 years of turkey hunting, I've come to the conclusion that, and I used to think the same thing. Oh, these turkeys are call shy. These turkeys are call shy. The only way you're going to make one call shy is if you call him up and spook him, or somebody
and
else calls him up. That's my opinion, and that's just an
opinion. Do you look at? I definitely agree with that. Do you look at spooking in another way of looking at it? If me and you hunting Troy and you're shooting, I'm calling whatever, calling, filming. There's only one gun, in other words. Well, we call two or three up, you pick one out, you kill him. The other two, they just learned a lot, but sometimes they stand there. I mean, I've seen, and you have too, we all have. Sometimes they stand there, they don't know what in the world happened.
I got a piece of footage I edited today in Alabama, me and my friend Kevin. I shot one, shucked the shell of my gun. The other one turned around. My turkey, you know, y'all have all seen this on video. Turkey starts flopping. They don't know what happened.
And they jump. They don't know what happened.
My honest opinion, if you shoot a turkey and you got somebody, boom, you shoot one and there's another one there. If you don't move and let that other turkey walk off, he don't know what happened. He heard a big boom. They hear booms all the time.
You know, last year, last weekend of season, that happened to Katie and I. Caught a turkey up, and Katie shot, and the turkey didn't do, it was one of the only times in the last few years I've been without a camera, and I'm still kicking myself for it, but he didn't do anything but lower his head about 4 inches and just sat there.
Oh, yeah.
And I looked at Katie, I said, shoot him again. She said, well, what's he doing? I said, just shoot him again, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, long story short, you know, turkey died. He was literally 16 yards when that happened. And it was as beautiful and calm of a day, sunshine, and 4:30 in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon. I mean, you know, you would think something that sudden, that all, you know, just boom, that close would startle him. And all he did was he didn't drop his head. He just lowered a little bit. Okay, he said, what's he doing? I said, nothing, shoot him again. And now I've seen them at times too, and we all have, you know, maybe two or three of them run up there, and you shoot one, and all of them, you know, tuck tail and run, or they fly off and do whatever. And I've always been like, well, you know, it's going to be hard to, you know, kill one of those other ones, you know. But
and come back the next morning and get right back on them.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that has as much to do with them as legitimately spooking one. You know, it doesn't do as much to them, you know.
You sitting there and kill a turkey. You kill one and the other one's standing there, and you jump up and take off running at him. First thing he's thinking is, well, here comes a bobcat, or here comes something's coming after me.
Something's coming after me, yeah, exactly.
But that boom,
exactly.
I don't know what that boom was. I've seen them. I know y'all seen them, too.
Yeah.
Shoot in a bunch of turkeys, one or two gobblers there, and shoot and either miss or kill one. The other one just stand there and gobble at the gun when it goes off.
Yeah, stand there and go, or jump on that turkey, you know, that's flopping. You know,
hey,
Troy, but it's different. That's why I wanted to bring that up, because that part of it is different than spooking a turkey.
That's right.
We're running low on time, and I want to cover one thing before we leave tonight. Troy, I want to talk about that line that every gobbler comes to. It's about 100 yards out. You know, say you're on the deadline. Yep. You know, they know that hen is supposed to come to them. What's some things that you can do to make him leave that line, come a little closer? What's some things you guys will do?
all that depends on the terrain. It depends on can you move. Depends on can you get up and move. You know, we at times, and we use this technique a lot in elk hunting. It's called the drop back method, where if you're hunting with a partner, friend or whatever, and you get a turkey or elk that hangs up, you get that one person to fall back another 70, 80, 90, 100 yards and call from that location, causing that turkey and or that elk to believe that, you know, whether it's another hen or another cow elk, you to believe that, hey, I've got to go another 50 or 60 yards to be able to see. What works great for us on the elk side, and even in turkeys, is if you can get over a ridge or a little high spot and call from there. You want that animal to come looking for you. That's the key. And if they can see you, which is most of the places here in Mississippi, unless you get in you guys' as part of the world now where you live. Y'all live up there in northeast Mississippi, where there's a little more hills down here in flat country, piney rows and hardwood bottoms. Goodness gracious, as y'all all know, in the first 10 days of the season, a turkey can see you for a country mile.
Oh, yeah.
And good luck moving. So what do you do in a situation like that? Well, in my opinion, depending on where I'm at, again, it's all geography based in that situation and you being able to move. But me personally, if I'm sitting in a river bottom and I get this turkey that comes up to 100 yards and he just stands on this one little high spot in the woods, strutting, gobbling, golly, won't come any close, and I can't do anything, and I'm by myself. I don't have a partner to fall back or we've tried that method, and my partner is back there. My buddy that I hunt with is back there 100 yards calling his little brains out, and it still ain't working. I'm going to let that turkey ease away and ease off, and when he eases off, I'm going to go up there and find exactly where he was standing, and I'm going to be sitting right there tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I'm going to be sitting at that. I'm going to be at that high spot waiting on him. Because that's his comfort zone. That's where he wanted to be. And he came to a point to where he says, girl, I know where you are. And you can hear me. I know you can see me. I can't see you. But you're calling to me, and I'm telling you where I'm at. This is which way I'm going. Two things. I'm going to be sitting right there where he left to walk off on that little ridge. Or when he walks off, if I hear him gobble again 300 yards past there, I'm going to go wherever that. I'm going to find out where he went. Somewhere in that area the next day, I'm going to be within 100 yards of where that turkey was. But that callback method,
hey, you know,
it works good. And it's all geography-based. It's can you make that move? Can you have a buddy get further back? How far can the turkey see? And it's the same thing in calling deer. You know, deer, it's a little bit different because you're working with an animal that has a sense of smell. So you're trying to work the wind and eyes and ears all at the same time. So it makes it a little bit more tougher.
Troy,
yeah.
One of the things, another thing that you hear from people a lot early in the morning is making a gobbler gobble too much on the limb. Can you make a gobbler gobble too much on the limb?
Well, I think if you yelp at him too much, you know, again, we supposed to be going to him. So he'll sit up there as long as you're yelping at him and he's gobbling at you. He's expecting you to walk up under him. I've seen gobblers do that before. Hens walk up, they fly out of the tree. Breed a hen, fly right back up in the tree.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen multiple times.
Year before, season before last, it was last weekend or next last weekend of the season, I had a turkey do that, and I knew where he was roosted, and I knew I got close. But he roosted by himself. I knew that. Fine. What I did not know from the evening previous was that there was two hens that roosted, you know, here I am, he's within 100 yards, actually he was not, but about 75 or 80 yards from me. It was late season, a lot of leaves on the trees. I knew I got close, but anyway, but the other side of him, 75, 80 yards, was two hens. I didn't know that going into that. I knew where he was. Well, when I got in there, I sat down, I let him start gobbling on his own. And after he gobbled four or five times, I just yelped real soft. He answered me, all fine and good. I said that, well, I'm good. That's good. And he sat there and he gobbled. Well, next thing I know, I hear turkeys flying down. Well, it It was really a thick canopy. Leaves were full foliage by that time of year. I threw my safety off. In my mind, that's him. And I'm looking for him out there. And I said, well, heck, where is he? You know? Well, next thing I know, I can see up through the woods two hens. And that's what I had heard flying down. They come through that little bottom. They come right up to this his big live oak he was in. He comes straight. It was almost like he climbed down out of that tree. He came straight down out of that tree. Bloop, landed right between them. And just strutted and strutted and strutted. And I thought, dang, you know. But he messed around with them for a minute. But that's what he was doing. He was waiting on them. And I had it happen mm-hmm. to me last year, early in the year. I couldn't get where I wanted to get just because of some hens and some jakes and stuff. But same thing happened. This turkey answered me fine. But, you know, and I think a lot of people overlook that is just because you and a turkey have a, you know, a rapport back and forth, y'all ain't the only two turkeys in the woods.
No.
Sometimes you are. Sometimes, sure. Yeah. I mean, I've had them fly out and land within, you know, when their feet hit the ground, they're close enough to shoot. Yeah. That's good fortune. But, you know, not every turkey in the woods is going to say anything, especially not on the roost, and they know where each other are. That's something that I preach a lot is, you know, you have to expect other turkeys to be around that turkey. Is it always true? No, but just go into it expecting that. Go into it with that in your mind, you know, and that it can help. You know, when you go into it, you know, just kind of expecting, well, I'm not the only hen. You know, he might answer me, but there's maybe 2, 3, 10 more out there that are saying, you know, they're talking so soft you may not hear it or realize it, or they may not say anything. And he's just waiting on one of them to show up.
They don't even say anything. Those yeah, wings, I mean, that hen walking on the limb, dragging her wings across the limb. You know, the first time I ever really witnessed it, turkey hens going to a gobbler was down around Lucydale, Mississippi, in the swamp bottoms. And this gobbler was roosted on a little high spot, and he would stay up in that tree. And I watched these hens fly two little sloughs, wasn't nothing big, you know, 15 yards wide, fly these two sloughs from high spot to get on the high spot with him. He flew down on the high spot with them, bred those two hens left. He just stood on that high spot, gobbling and strutting. And sure enough, about 10 minutes later, you see another hen fly over there. And it was just one hen after the other coming to that gobbler. And he didn't have to go nowhere. Didn't have to leave.
He knew,
He was on his throne. And, you know, you really want to be able to ever witness that for people that are listening to this. And I know people listen to this podcast all over the country, but if you get the opportunity, spend some time Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, in these open areas where you watch what goes on, and spend a little time just paying attention to what turkeys do, and get to know them a little bit better. But spend time watching them and listening to them, and it's amazing out west to watch those hens, how far they'll come to a gobbler getting out on the edge of a field and into a pocket, or you get into these big giant, you know, 2-3,000 acres of cornfields and, you know, woodlot, little wood lanes running through it, and little ditches and SMZs running through there. And every, you know, you hear about, man, we got 50 gobblers wadded up in the fall, but you go back in the springtime and there's a gobbler in every corner. And they're just picking their little spot, and they're just picking their own little zone. And then the hens will just travel that, you know, they know the travel route. Same, no different than elk, no different than deer, no different than all of them. Those gobblers know the travel route, so those hens, and they're going to be where they need to be. And say, you know what? I watched that girl the other day. She come from up there going to catch the bus down here. I'm going to wait in between that bus stop and catch up before she gets to JoJo. Mm-hmm.
I love to put human talk into turkey's brains.
Oh, I think they have human thoughts 75% of the time. And, you know, that was one of the funniest things. Good friend of ours, Josh Crizzle, told me, I was in his shop not long ago. We were talking about turkeys. He said, I swear, this one right back here behind my house. I swear, he thinks like a human most of the time.
You know, I'm going to tell you, the one thing you don't want to do as a turkey hunter The one thing you don't, there's three things. It's, first of all, for listeners that are new listeners or looking to become new turkey hunters this year, two things you got to have before you even think about starting a turkey hunt. Write this down. If anybody's listening to this, get you a piece of paper, grab your phone, get to your notes segment, and jot these two things down. Most important things you'll ever want to gather in the turkey hunting world. Two things you got to have. A good job and a good wife, because you're probably going to lose both of them. And then the third thing is this. Don't ever, ever, ever give a turkey a name.
No, gosh, no. Nope. When you do, you know, and I'll say this, this will be one of my last things to say on this one, is last year, and I'm lucky, I'll say this, I can knock myself out of that first group, Troy, because my wife loves it as much, if not more, than me. And she is a killer through and through. But last year, there was a turkey we dealt with from day one to the last, and I literally mean the sunset of the last day. And going into that last week, she said, you know what? The heck with him. I'm through with him. I mean, I'm not kidding you. There was three different trees that he'd roost in, and we knew every one of them. She said, I'm through with him. I know where he's going to be in the morning. I know where he's going to be in the evening. I'm through with him. His name is the devil, and I'm done with him. And I said, well, now, wait a minute. You know what that does. But she said, I know. You name one, it's over with. She said, but his name is the devil, and I'm through with him. And look, I didn't argue with her. We didn't go back after that turkey. We didn't do that. But that it's funny you say that, because that's the truth. Don't ever name one. And
well, that I've
named
a bunch of them. And you can't say it, and I can't say none of the names on this show.
I understand that for sure. And another thing I'll say too, and I'll leave it this, is don't ever, I don't care how good you are, what your name is, where you are, don't ever say that turkey's dead in the morning. don't do it. Now, sure,
only
sometimes
way they're dead in the morning
out.
Is if you walk up in the dark and shoot them off a limb.
When you put him in the back of the truck, you can tell me he's dead, and that's it.
That's right.
But
I will say this, and we talked about this at the NWTF in a seminar, and you know, it's gotten to the point in today's world of the sport of hunting. Blame it on videos, blame it on TV, blame it on social media. Hunting has changed, for lack of a better word. People are starting to judge their success based on size. And the one thing I love about the wild turkey, it's not a size issue. The trophy is in the hunt. And I tell people this all the time, please do not go into the turkey woods, the deer woods, the elk woods. I don't care if it's squirrel, rabbit, it doesn't matter. You base your success on your experience. And the day that you go into the woods and come home and not learn something, you just wasted that day. It's a gift to us all. It's an honor that God entrust us as hunters and sportsmen and conservationists to have dominion over all those animals and to be able to do the things that we do. And for folks like us that make a living in it and doing what we do, you got to be so careful not to take it for granted. And in today's world, we've got so many people that are basing their success and their identity on who they've become as a hunter, where in all honesty, you're only as good as the places you hunt. I don't care if you got 5 feet, 50 yards, or 5,000 acres. Base your success on your day out there and enjoy that experience. And whenever you do get the chance, be sure and share it with somebody else. It's so precious and such a incredible, incredible gift to know that somebody would trust us with that. and say, I want you to take care of what I made perfect. And Lord knows we as humans make a lot of mistakes, but it's such an incredible, incredible gift. I look at it every day, and I, as I get older, I appreciate it more, because it gets to the point now where I could go out there and just hear a turkey or just listen to the springtime woods come alive. And don't get me wrong, deer season, when it finally comes to end because of what we all do for a living, you know, sometimes you can't wait for it to close so you can get back to a more normal way of life from running the roads like we do in this industry. But to be able to go and just sit there and watch the sun come up in the morning and the sun go down in the evening. And Toxie said it best a long time ago, you know, he's going to do everything he can to make every sunrise he can. And it's so special. Gosh, I hate to see people get to the point where they don't want to share a picture of their turkey because it don't have a 12 inch bid or inch and a half spurs, or they don't want to share a picture or a story of their deer because it was a legal 6 or 8 point buck at their state put a certain size limit on, because it's not 160 or 170 inch deer. It's sad that it's come to that, and I hope that we can all overcome that and share the experience. I can remember in high school as a little boy, we didn't have video cameras, and I would take pictures with Polaroid cameras and couldn't wait to come home and show friends the pictures, not the pictures of the kills or the ducks or the whatever. I would try to take pictures while it was happening to try to explain to people what was, hey, now right here in this picture, this happened, and right here in this picture, this happened, and share those stories. And I can remember writing stories in my language arts class, and my teacher would ask my mom, where does he come up with this stuff? My mom said, he's not coming up with this, what he did last weekend. You know, basically almost like write a play about what happened last weekend. And my teacher's like, his mind is so imaginable. My mom said, he's not imagining it. It happened last weekend. That's what he's telling you. So to be able to share those stories, and in today's world, we got so many, the electronics that we have to be able to share them, but share the experience, not just the trophy. And the trophy is the experience. And never, ever, 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 ever be ashamed of what you've taken, because you took a life. But you took a life that God gave to us, and man, it's just, to me, it's so special. It's so special.
Well, T-Roy, look, come back in a couple of weeks. I want to talk some hen, duck, turkeys. A couple more topics I want to talk about. Turkey expert of the End of the Line podcast.
Maybe the next time
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We may be able to do it while we're together next week. Just sitting around the table.
Let's just pray for good weather, because if it's cold, we'll probably have a fire and roast marshmallows right in the middle of the field. It's up to me. Because I learned a long time ago, when you bring kids hunting, make it fun. I don't care what you do. If it means getting up and walking away from a gobbling turkey and going to play in the creek, make it fun, because guess what? If you walk away from a turkey that wasn't coming anyway, you leave him alone, come back to him the next morning, hunt him again. Go have fun in the creek with your kids.
Yeah, we'll have fun. Truth. She is eat up with it. All I want you to... I just remind me, I want to capture her eyes first time that turkey gobbles. It's something to see. She gets bug-eyed. Woo! Anyway, Troy... can't wait to see you next week. If I don't, we'll have you back on in a couple of weeks. We got a few more topics to talk about. Josh, thank you again. Troy, thank you. We appreciate it. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckTime.com.